All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are continuing to preview this upcoming week 3 matchup between the Falcons and Bears with Cameron Lee of the Believe in Bears podcast. We're going to finally examine the official answer we got on why the Falcons failed to recover the onside kick in week 2, as well as answer any of your remaining all 22 questions from that Dallas game.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. So, guys, it's me, Aaron Freeman. You've been following me on Twitter at FalcFans. You know me from many years of covering the Atlanta Falcons at the now defunct website, FalcFans.com. Of course, I am now currently hosting this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today we're wrapping up our week of action by continuing to preview this upcoming week 3 matchup between the Falcons and Bears with none other than Cameron Lee of the Believe in Bears podcast, former NFL offensive lineman. I'm also going to answer a couple of film questions from listeners talking about Dirk Cutter's play calling and game scripts. We'll also touch upon the Falcons safety play, focusing on DeMonte Casey and Keanu Neal from their week 2 loss to the Cowboys. But first, we're going to talk about Ben Kotuka, the Falcons special teams coach, taking responsibility, explaining why the Falcons botched that onside kick when he spoke to the media on Thursday. And we'll also talk about some of the key changes for the Falcons as well in their Thursday injury report after practice. So let's get into that as our Locked On Falcons lead story. Falcons special teams coordinator Ben Kotuka spoke to the media on Thursday, took full responsibility for the failed onside kick recovery that could have potentially sealed the win for the Falcons in week 2 against the Dallas Cowboys. But eventually that failure led to the team's 40-39 loss. Kotuka explained in his own words why multiple Falcon players seemed to watch the ball and failed to fall on it.
Our players knew that they could go into the restraining area and recover the ball. But they also knew that if they went into the restraining area to recover the spinning football, that there's a risk that if they don't recover it cleanly, that gives the kicking team the opportunity to recover the ball, because then it becomes a live ball. We should have aggressively gotten on the football. I'm responsible for everything the unit does and fails to do. And, you know, it's something that we've looked at. We've made the corrections. We've talked to the players, and we'll do a better job and look forward to Sunday's opportunity.
Kotuka continued to elaborate and explain why he personally didn't think the ball would go 10 yards due to the precision of Greg Zuerlein's spinning onside kick, which Dallas special teams coordinator Jim Fossil labeled as a quote-unquote watermelon kick. Whether Kotuka's explanation passes the smell test for you is up to you as an individual. I can only speak for myself, but I never really doubted that the ball would go 10 yards at any point watching the game live, and certainly not at any point rewatching the game over and over on the All-22 as well as elsewhere. And my suspicion is that Kotuka is playing up the quote-unquote unknown trajectory of that watermelon kick to better protect the players from continued criticism from folks like myself as well as others that we've been throwing their way over the past week, suggesting that they didn't quite understand what were pretty basic rules in how and when you can recover an onside kick. And as Kotuka said, he's ultimately responsible for the successes and failures of that special teams unit. And similar to how defensive coordinator Raheem Morris fell on the sword after the Falcons' defensive struggles in week 1, I think Kotuka has every reason to fall on the sword in this instance as well. But let's move on from that dark chapter that will continue to live in infamy in Falcons history and talk more about some topical things that apply to this upcoming week's action, notably the injuries. The Falcons did get some good news on their Thursday practice report with players like offensive tackle Jake Matthews, safety DeMonte Casey, and linebacker Foye Olukun all were upgraded. Matthews is dealing with a knee injury. Casey's been battling a hip injury, and Foye Olukun is listed with a hamstring injury. All three players failed to participate in Wednesday's practice, but took part in Thursday's practice on a limited basis, putting them on an relatively optimistic trajectory that they will be able to suit up on Sunday when the Falcons square off against the Chicago Bears. But the Falcons, in not so optimistic news, still had a total of 7 players that sat out Thursday's practice due to injuries, with an 8th player in center Alex Mack getting his usual non-injury related rest day. Among the 7 injured players, the most prominent were 5 starters, including wide receiver Julio Jones, who's battling a hamstring injury, safety Ricardo Allen, who's dealing with an elbow injury, and defensive ends Dante Fowler and Tack McKinley, who are battling ankle and groin injuries respectively, as well as tackle Caleb McGarry, who's dealing with a knee. Earlier reports this week already indicated that McGarry would probably miss this week's game, but the hope is that Jones, Allen, Fowler, and McKinley at least can get upgrades on Friday to at least limited participation in that day's practice, which at least will open the door that all 4 of them could suit up Sunday versus the Bears. Of course, the 0-2 Falcons are desperately looking for a win, and that becomes significantly harder if they're down 5 starters, which currently appears to be the case. So, guys, there's your Locked On Falcons lead story. We're going to continue to talk about that opponent, the Chicago Bears, that the Falcons are desperately seeking a chance to win against this weekend, with Cameron Lee of the Believe in Bears podcast coming up. And maybe we'll get his thoughts on whether the Bears defense is good enough to stop the Falcons offense, regardless of whether Julio Jones is out there on the field. But before we get there, you guys should help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you in your community. They remember your order and call you by your name, always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support, so let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, help your team score and choose to shop at a local business. And while you're there, look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. So later on today, we're going to talk about what I saw on the All 22. And while I appreciate you guys seeking me as your go-to source for all your film related questions, you can just dig into the film yourself with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game with full game replays, dive into the All 22 with the coach's film, or if you're short on time, then all you need is 45 minutes to see every snap of any game with the condensed version. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. You'll also learn from the league's best players with over 40 NFL Game Pass film sessions. So you can check out Jamal Adams, Eddie Jackson, or Devontae Adams, get inside their perspectives as they break down the concepts and techniques that make them some of the best in the biz. NFL Game Pass also provides you access to the entire NFL Films archive, so you can catch up on Good Morning Football, A Football Life, and Hard Knocks. Get it all by going to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. So, guys, it's me, Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons, and we're back for another day previewing this upcoming Week 3 matchup between the Atlanta Falcons and the Chicago Bears. And I have a special guest with me to sort of close out the week here on Locked On Falcons. I have with me Cameron Lee, former NFL offensive lineman, formerly of the Chicago Bears, as well as currently a co-host of the Believe in Bears podcast, which you can check out on the Believe Sports Podcast Network. Cameron, my friend, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Aaron.
Well, I'm eager to get your insights into this Falcons-Bears matchup and sort of pick your brain a little bit further on this upcoming Bears team and sort of how they match up with the Atlanta Falcons. Obviously, the Bears have gotten off to a 2-0 start. The Falcons are off to an 0-2 start. Falcons definitely need to find a way to win this upcoming weekend. And, you know, I know from your perspective, you don't want to necessarily see that at the Bears' expense. But, you know, just trying to get a little bit more insights into this Bears team to sort of figure out, okay, how can the Falcons head into this weekend and find a way to get that win? And I want to sort of start things off talking about these first 2 games for the Bears. Watching those games, they kind of got off to a slow start against the Lions, then came back, finished strong, to win that game. They got off to a very fast start against the Giants the following week in week two, and then sort of let the Giants back into the game. And I'm curious, is one of the things going on with this Bears team, they're trying to put together a complete game, and whether or not this sort of one good half per week sort of style, do you feel like is going to potentially let them down this upcoming weekend, potentially against this Falcons team?
Yeah, I think the big thing that we need to look at here, you know, the Bears being 2-0 is pretty fortuitous at this point. They're, you know, very fortunate to go in there and play two not-so-great teams. And so when they played really just one good quarter week one and one good half week two, and that was enough to pull out two victories, you know, I don't know that that's the kind of thing that they're going to be able to do against the Falcons. You know, the Falcons being 0-2, I don't know that that necessarily all adds up when you go back and watch the tapes. I mean, this is a team that definitely looks better than their record would imply, and I'm not totally sure that the Bears are quite as good as 2-0 would imply. So, yeah, I think that the Bears are going to be searching to put that whole game together. And, I mean, until they do so, none of us Chicago Bears fans have completely and totally, you know, accepted, hey, this team is as good as that record would imply. We're still just kind of trying to see what's it going to take to do all that.
Yeah, I think if they can do that against the Falcons this week, that will certainly give a lot more confidence for this Bears team to, you know, be in the mix in the NFC North, where I think a lot of other people went into the season expecting other teams to sort of come out atop that division. And certainly the Bears have an opportunity with this 2-0 start, if they can extend it to 3-0, to right back to be in the mix of those things. But talking about this matchup, you know, the Falcons are pretty beat up. It seems like the thing that the Bears are going to hang their hat on if they do continue to make the push for the division title in their division is their defense. And I'm curious, you know, probably the most notable injury that the Falcons are dealing with is, of course, with their arguably their best player in Julio Jones. And I'm wondering if, regardless of Julio Jones' status, whether he's healthy enough to play or he has to sit out this week, do you have the sort of confidence in this Bears defense that, regardless of Julio Jones' status, that you would feel pretty confident that they could be able to handle this Falcons offense this weekend?
You know, the Falcons, they put up a lot of points, and the Bears rely heavily on their ability to hang their hat on that defense and go out there and make big plays and contain other teams' star players. And, you know, what the Falcons were able to do with a hobbled Julio Jones, I think that the Falcons are going to be able to have success offensively, whether he's there or not, just going off of what we've seen through these first two games. You know, the Bears secondary has definitely shown up through these first two and shown out, and they've played pretty well. But even in doing so, they've gone against, again, hobbled receiving cores. You know, there wasn't Kenny Golladay when they played the Lions. There wasn't Sterling Shepard, I believe, got hurt in week two against the Giants. But Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones, that's a whole different animal, and this offense is a whole different animal. So I think that the Bears will be okay, but I'm not, like, confident, you know, they're going to go in there and completely hold this team, you know, to the 17 points that it often takes for the Chicago Bears to win football games, because they're not going to come out here and put up a ton of points either. So I am a little bit worried in that regard.
Yeah, and I want to get more into that notion of sort of their ability to put points on the board. Coming up on today's Locked On Falcons, as we continue to have this conversation with Cameron Lee of the Believe in Bears podcast. We're switching gears. We talked about sort of the Bears hanging their hat on the defensive side of the ball, but Cameron, I want to sort of switch gears more to the offense, because that, to me, at least looking at this Bears team, is the bigger question mark. And, you know, given your background as a former NFL offensive lineman, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this Bears offensive line and this expectation that they're not necessarily as pass heavy an offense as maybe the Falcons have faced the last couple of weeks with Seattle. I mean, that caught everybody off guard, with basically Seattle switching from a run heavy offense to a pass heavy offense, and certainly caught the Falcons off guard. But we know Dallas is not afraid to get back into a passing attack, given their weapons and Dak Prescott. But that's not necessarily where the Bears' sort of identity is. And I'm wondering, with that identity being more geared towards a balanced attack, more geared towards the running the football, do you feel like this Bears offensive line has shown enough to give you the confidence that they can kind of go into this weekend and control the game with their ground attack?
Yeah, the Bears have looked really strong up front through the first 2 weeks, and that was something that I was concerned about. You know, the Bears did not perform very well at the offensive line position last year. I think there was a lot of injuries and some continuity things, and is Kyle Long going to play? And then Rashad Coward would come in, and so there was just a lot of moving parts. Cody Whitehair's a center. Cody Whitehair's a guard. James Daniels, you know, just lots of different things like that. It seems like through 2 weeks, the Bears have a defined, you know, kind of an identity, and guys are learning their roles, and they're starting to gel a little bit, and they've looked really impressive on the ground through these first two games. I love what we've seen from the guard play. James Daniels looks like he's taken a huge step forward. I think Charles Leno Jr. is playing a lot better at the left tackle position. For the most part, they've been able to come out and really dictate the line of scrimmage, which I think is just a huge part for them creating what it is that we want to get, that offensive ground game that really, you know, goes into the success of the entire offense. So, and given sort of the injuries that you're seeing as we look at the injury report for the Falcons, and if we're being honest, it's not necessarily a star-studded defense anyway. You know, there are some players out there that might, you know, cause some issues, but I really do think that the Bears have a very good opportunity to come out here, run the ball, and, you know, establish that ground and pound game and you know, put up a good showing on the ground and get the offense going.
Yeah, you talk about that. They have some injuries to guys like Tack McKinley and Dante Fowler, Tyler Davis. And it seems like pretty much everybody besides Grady Jarrett is pretty beat up on this Falcons defensive line. And obviously, Grady Jarrett's their best player, but it is one of those things where he can't basically take on five guys on his own. So that's going to be something that's going to be interesting. And seemingly with the Bears offensive line playing as well as it has, going up against this Falcons defensive line that's pretty beat up, it does seem like that is a potential matchup that favors the Bears. I'm curious about another potential matchup that you could argue favors the Bears, given how questionable the Falcons secondary has been so far this season with their struggles to contain the likes of the Seahawks and Cowboys passing game. But I do look at this Bears passing game as potentially not as potent. It seems to basically be the Allen Robinson show, which is a pretty entertaining show. Anybody who's watched Allen Robinson play, you will definitely get enjoyment out of that. But I do wonder if it's a little bit too centered on Allen Robinson, if your offense is a little too one-dimensional. We know here in Atlanta that in past years, despite how great Julio Jones has been, that if your offense is entirely surrounded and centered on Julio Jones, it's not as potent as it will be if other players can step up. And that's a big reason why the emergence of a player like Calvin Ridley has been so critical for the Falcons offense to sort of step up. And I'm just wondering a little bit, are there concerns that the Bears passing game is too centered around Allen Robinson, and sort of are there other playmakers there that can potentially step up this weekend and really sort of take some of the pressure off of Robinson this week?
Yeah, I think the Bears are at their best when they are getting the ball out and getting it into the hands of different players and giving more guys to make opportunities to make plays. And we've seen Allen Robinson make some big plays early on this season. We've seen Anthony Miller have the huge week one. We've seen Darnell Mooney step up. We've seen, you know, Jimmy Graham score a touchdown. We saw David Montgomery have a touchdown catch last week. This team is at its best when they're spreading the ball around, getting it into the hands of different guys in different ways and different playmakers. The thing that scares me the most about the Bears passing attack, given what we've seen about, you know, Mitchell Trubisky and his ability to come out and execute and make big plays and put it together for four full quarters, if he has a person that he leans on too much, it is definitely Allen Robinson. If you go back and watch film, if Mitchell Trubisky is forcing a ball, it's going to Allen Robinson. And like we said, that is when this team tries to do too much, is when they're trying to force everything and force feed Allen Robinson. And so, you know, guys like I mentioned before, Mooney and Miller, the younger wide receivers, the lesser proven wide receivers, if those guys are able to get incorporated and you know, have those big pop plays and maybe get over the top or do something against maybe this beat-up Falcons secondary, I think that will help the Bears exponentially.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup. I think certainly, you know, a lot of people, I think, probably went into the season, for at least on the Falcons side of things, looking at these early games and being like, oh, the Bears definitely a win. Mitch Trubisky, you know, all the issues that they have. And now it's a situation where I think certainly you could still make the argument that it's the easiest win of the four opponents that the Falcons are facing, starting out the season with Seattle, Dallas, and Green Bay being the other three opponents. But It doesn't mean that it's going to be easy for the Falcons to come by a victory, because I think this Bears team, unlike the Falcons, are, you know, sort of coming in to their own. And certainly we'll have to sort of see if the Falcons have the sense of urgency that they didn't quite have at the end of that Cowboys game to be able to take advantage of the opportunities that they may get in this upcoming matchup. But Cameron, I really do appreciate you coming on, joining me, sharing your insights. And we'll just sort of have to discover together, all of us, whether or not the Bears can continue building upon the success that they've already established these first couple of weeks, or whether or not the Falcons will finally get over that hump and finally get in the win column. But that being said, I appreciate you coming on, and go ahead and plug, you know, where people can find your stuff, as well as what you guys have going on at the Believe in Bears.
Yeah, go ahead and make sure you guys follow or subscribe the Believe in Bears podcast. You can find us on all the major platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, if you're using that. Make sure you check us out, Believe in Bears. That's B-L-E-A-V. And we put out a couple shows a week. We'll do a Thursday pregame show prepping for the matchups to come, and then we'll do a Sunday postgame show giving you guys sort of the rundown on what happened that day. So please make sure you guys check that out. And thanks for having me on, Aaron.
All right. I appreciate it, man. I would like to say I'd like to have you on soon, but I don't know when the Falcons and Bears will go toe to toe. You know, stranger things have happened. Maybe there's an opportunity for something to come along again in January.
Hey man, I'm a jack of all trades. So if you need me to talk about, you know, the NFC South, or if you just want to hang out, man, just give me a call. I'll hop on.
I will take you up on that. I appreciate that. All right, man. Have a good one.
Thank you.
All right, guys, there you have it. Cameron Lee, Believe in Bears. Appreciate him coming on, sharing some additional insights. It's the end of the week. I haven't really given a score prediction on the podcast. I picked the Falcons to win both of the last two games. I will pick the Falcons to win this game. I will say, though, if they do not win, if basically I go start the season 0-3, picking the Falcons to win games, I probably won't pick the Falcons ever again the rest of the season. I'm sure there might be a couple of games sprinkled in, but I'll just let you guys know ahead of time that, if I pick them to win, or I am picking them to win, and if they lose again this weekend, I'm just like, okay, I'm done picking the Falcons. I'm just not going to pick them anymore. And if I lose games at that point, then it's just like, whatever, right? You know, the reverse jinx or whatever the case may be at that point in time. So right now, I feel like it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think the Falcons offense is going to struggle to move the ball and score points against this Bears defense. But I do feel like they'll do just enough. They'll make just enough plays to pull out a very, very, very close win. It'll be something like a 23-21, probably a last-second Young Waku field goal or something to win the game in the end. Some critical turnover, some botched kick or something, you know, that winds up, you know, giving the Falcons an opportunity to win this game in the end. So basically, as I just explained, this is the last time I can have that level of confidence in the Falcons moving forward. And we will be back to sort of see if my confidence, if you can call it that, my optimism, my hope, whatever you want to call it, pays off on Sunday. But we're not quite done yet on today's Locked On Falcons podcast, and we're going to continue diving in and answering some of those lingering questions from the week two all 22 of the Falcons versus Cowboys, starting with Dirk Cutter's play calling. And you might be a little bit surprised by my answer on whether or not Dirk did a good job in that Dallas game. Are we actually going to compliment Dirk Cutter on the Locked On Falcons podcast? Well, stay tuned. But while you're doing that, you should also stay tuned to the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. It's Friday. That means Fan Friday. And listen as hosts Trevor Sikkema and Ben Solak break down college football, the NFL, as well as pop culture. It's everything you can ask for, and you don't want to miss it. Subscribe to the Locked On NFL Draft podcast on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple, Spotify, or whatever you're listening to me right now. Invest in your intuition. Use promo code LOCKEDON and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie. So our first listener question from the All-22 comes from at fan since 1988 on Twitter. He asked, question for the film breakdown. Did the Falcons use more Shanny principles besides the tight end throwback early? Felt like the first 15 was scripted was good. Then Dirt Cutter went pretty vanilla and tried to force run on first and second, only to leave Matt having to bail out the offense on third and four through six. Is his early down running much more than last year's? I don't think Dirk was as vanilla as you say. I think his early down running is a little bit more balanced than it was last year, at least in this Dallas game. I haven't looked it up quite for the week one game. I felt like maybe you can say he was pretty vanilla on the first two drives, like with a run, run, pass, and then run, pass, pass on the first two drives, but the Falcons failed to move the ball. But, you know, I think most of that was player execution. Gage dropped an easy third down pass on the first drive. Ryan made a very questionable decision in throwing the second drive, overthrowing Gage, and it probably should have been picked off. So I don't really have a major issue with the play calling beyond nitpicking. And mainly that's like the Falcons didn't really mix up their personnel groupings and formations. They basically called 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers set on five of the first six plays. So I think the Dallas game does represent pretty good progress for Dirt Cutter. I think if the two pillars of the Shanahan offense is the outside zone running scheme as well as play action passing, I think Dirk did a good job. He didn't abandon that after the initial game script like he arguably did last week against Seattle or the previous week against Seattle. You know, on the first 15 plays, they had 9 passes to 6 runs, which may seem like a lot, but you know, I don't feel like that's completely out of whack. They did run play action on 4 out of those first 9 passes and generated 64 yards and 2 touchdowns off of those play action passes. He continued to call play action thereafter. If you remove sort of the red zone stuff where you're less likely to call play action in those situations, 3 out of his next 5 pass plays after the first 15 did involve play action passing. He did go away from outside zone run, however, after the initial couple of plays. I tweeted out on Wednesday that Todd Gurley's first 3 carries were stretch plays, although the third one was technically a toss, but it's basically the same. And only 3 of Gurley's remaining 18 runs were stretch plays. They ran a total of 9 stretch plays by my count against Dallas on it. You know, out of their total of 30 called runs, you throw in about 4 crack tosses that I also counted. You're talking about 13 sort of the bread and butter outside zone plays. Maybe there were a few more that I missed. But you know, that's roughly about 40% of the called runs, which is about what the Falcons were in 2016. I think they were like 43% outside zone based off of what I remember seeing at the time. So that was about where the Falcons were in this game. I can tell you that on those 13 runs, just those 9 stretch plays and the 4 crack tosses, the Falcons had a rushing success rate of 54%, which means that their success rate on all the other 17 runs was 35%. So for those of you guys that aren't necessarily as familiar with success rate, basically anything when it comes to rushing the ball above 45% is considered really good for the running game. 54% is exceptionally good. Anything below 40% is considered poor when it comes to running the ball. So the Falcons were exceptionally good with their outside zone runs and poor for their non-outside zone runs. So that kind of tells you sort of where their bread should be buttered moving forward, which I think we all kind of agree with. So still there's room for improvement with Dirk, more outside zone, but I think relatively speaking, and I didn't perceive this live, but upon rewatching the film, I do think this was one of his better called games, arguably his best called game, at least in Atlanta, going all the way back to 2012, because I don't recall too many instances of great called games in 2013 and 2014, and certainly not in 2019. So kudos to Dirk Cutter making some progress. So hopefully he can continue to build upon this, and it will pay off for the Falcons offense moving forward. Now, we'll move forward with our next question from Mave2124 on Twitter. He asked, when you watch the film, can you focus on and discuss the secondary? Seems the secondary fell apart once Rico went out. Too many chunk plays. Yeah, they did give up some chunk plays in the second half of this game. They gave up 6 big plays and through the air in the second half and just 1 in the first half. To me, you know, talking about the secondary play, once Rico went out, I had concerns because I just don't think DeMonte Casey's a good safety. He's not that effective as a single high safety. You know, I know everybody gets enamored with his interceptions, but he just is too often out of position. And there was one play in particular in the fourth quarter, in the final minutes, on a 24-yard play to tight end Blake Bell that sort of helps set up the Cowboys. One of their final scores when they cut the lead to 39-30 with 5 minutes left. It was on that drive. And it was the play that you guys may recall where Dak Prescott was able to avoid Dante Fowler's pressure and then sort of extend the play outside the pocket and hit Bell along the sideline down the field. And I think this play was a good example of some of the disguise coverages that they did a couple of times in this game that was something similar to what they did last year when they faced the 49ers, which is something that we talked about quite a bit during the offseason last season as a good indicator of this team doing a better job from a scheming coaching standpoint. But on this particular play, they just simply didn't execute. And I put a lot of the blame on DeMonte Casey. But when they went cover two, Casey and Denard were the deep safeties in this case. And Casey had the deep half to the near side. You had Isaiah Oliver sort of running under the middle zone in between instead of the middle linebacker, which you typically would have in Tampa 2. On this particular play, Deion Jones was off the field, and they had Michael Walker and Laura Reynolds as the two linebackers on this play. I don't necessarily know why Deion Jones was off the field, but I imagine it was probably related to fatigue. He got a couple of plays off in the fourth quarter. This was around play like 60 for the Cowboys, so probably needed a breather for a couple of snaps, and they put Laura Reynolds in the game. But on this particular play, Casey was playing the near side deep half. They had Keanu Neal playing the flat and Walker sort of playing that seam in the underneath stuff that you have in the cover two. And you had CeeDee Lamb run from the opposite hash, run a crosser to the near side. Then you had Blake Bell, who was lined up on the outside down the hash, run an out pattern. And so Casey's deep responsibilities meant that these were the routes that he was primarily responsible for. And those guys ran vertical routes that got behind Neal and Walker, the underneath defenders. And so Casey's job is to basically prevent those guys from, you know, getting past him, getting deeper than him in the cover two. And so what ended up happening on the play was the pocket started to collapse. Dak Prescott pump fake to the far side. And that caused Casey to completely bail on his responsibilities and start playing like he was playing single high safety and bail to the middle of the field. And that essentially left Keanu Neal out to dry, where he was stuck trying to cover both Lamb and Bell because Lamb had settled behind Walker and Bell was to his outside behind him. And so was stuck in no man's land trying to be like, okay, I got to play both of these guys. And so Casey should have in that situation been able to pick up Bell behind Keanu Neal, but instead, you know, Keanu Neal, or when Dak extended the play and avoided Fowler, he was able to hit Bell, who was wide open along the sideline. And so, you know, that to me is Casey's responsibility. But not to say that, you know, blaming all the Falcons' big plays that they allowed in the second half on Ricardo Allen's absence and blaming it all on DeMonte Casey. But that play in particular really stood out because not only are you getting the coaching staff doing the things that everybody wants them to do, which is, you know, disguising their coverages and scheming things and making it harder on the quarterbacks, but then one guy basically not doing his job and it completely breaks down. So that play to me signals one of the main issues that has plagued this team over the last couple of years, which is that it seems like a lot of players on this defense are a bunch of robots and they don't really understand why they are asked to do the things that they're doing. So the coaches call a coverage and a guy will go to a spot like a robot, but then when it's time to adjust and improvise when they need to, they don't necessarily do that. And so that's one thing that I do think you can blame coaching on, that they're not really coaching up these guys, teaching these guys that aspect. Although then on the other side, on the flip side, you could blame the players for just not being able to figure it out. But, you know, that depends on your philosophy on if a student is able, you know, is failing your class, is it on the student or is it on the teacher? It's probably on a little bit of both. Our last question comes from T-Bus TSN at Falcons 4L. He asks two questions for the pod. One, does Keanu Neal still look good in the All-22? And two, how do you continue to be a Falcons fan through all this? Makes me not even like football anymore. For your first question, Keanu Neal did give up a big play on that 58-yarder to Amari Cooper in the third quarter. He doesn't quite look as explosive or decisive in coverage. He was only beat one time by the tight end in man coverage in this game, which came early in the game. I didn't really notice any other instances after that where he struggled in man coverage, but there were certainly a couple of times where he really seemed to be out of position against zone. He did have that big hit on Noah Brown that he looked like the Keanu of old, showing that explosiveness, but you know, he isn't quite having the same impact that he had pre-injury so far this season. So he does not look quite the same. And it's going to take time. I mean, that's one of those things with the Achilles. You never know. We were hopeful. We were optimistic going into the season. But more often than not, it takes the better part of, you know, that second season coming back from that injury before the guy looks good. As to your second question, look, I get it. You know, and as I've said before, it's one of those things where, like, I don't tie as much of my enjoyment of being a fan of this football team on the wins and losses. I think that's sort of the key. And that's something I learned many, many years ago, because doing the things that I do, breaking these things down, if I lived and died by the team winning and losing, I would have burned out emotionally many, many years ago. And so, like, I don't sit here and say that everybody can do that. You know, I know only a very, very small percentage of robots like me that, you know, are devoid of emotion and heartless and have been beaten down by this team over 30 years can do that. But I think that's really the sort of the key. It's like, hey, you know, like, a lot of it is when you're watching a game live on Sunday and you see the team struggling, you're just like, oh, well, they're going to lose this game. And you just sort of make peace with it during the game so that it becomes easier. And it's not necessarily say by the end of the game you're good with it, but it becomes easier by the time you get to, you know, towards the end of Sunday night, that you can go live the rest of your life, watch Sunday night football, be able to wash the bad taste of the Falcons out of your mouth. Or at least that's how I've been able to do it. And then, you know, Monday, when you're like me and you're rewatching these games, you know, multiple times during the course of the week, you've just learned through trial and error that you just kind of have to reset and, you know, try to do your best to sort of mitigate those emotions and that emotional roller coaster that this team puts us on every Sunday. So it's not easy to do. I would recommend it if you think you're capable of doing it, doing your best to try, because it'll just make, you know, these losses, you know, they still hurt. Don't get me wrong. They still hurt, but it's one of those things where they don't break you in the way that I think they break a lot of people. But look, here's what I will say. And I've said this many times on the podcast over the last couple of years. Look, you survived Super Bowl 51. You can survive anything. So I know these times are tough and it sucks, you know, and it's not going to get easier, but it's just one of those things where, just think about that. Like, you came back after that Super Bowl. You can come back from anything. Just think about that. That's the positive note that we'll end today's podcast on, guys. Appreciate you joining me on today's episode. We'll wrap things up here. If you want to send in your questions for future All 22 reviews or just anything in general, of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at FalcFans. I'm sorry. Yeah, you can hit me up on Twitter at FalcFans. But if it's a podcast question, send it into Locked On Falcons. You can also send it into Facebook at Locked On Falcons if that's your preferred social media platform. Or you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com as well. And we will be back on Sunday with a rapid reaction to whatever happens in this Bears game. It'll probably post around the time that Sunday Night Football goes live, somewhere between 7 and probably 9 or 10 p.m. Eastern time, depending on, you know, sort of how hectic it is. Like last week, it was a little later. I think week one, I got it up around 7 or 8, around 8 o'clock. And then I think last week it was maybe like 9:30, a little closer to that time. And it's just that extra hour and a half is just the emotional turmoil of sort of having to come down from last week's game. So if it's a relatively smooth game for the Falcons, you'll probably get it earlier. Or if it's a blowout, you'll probably get it earlier as well. So there's just a lot less that is required of me emotionally to get those podcasts up. So definitely check that out. If you can't listen to it Sunday night, of course, it's going to be there for you Monday morning on your commute or when you go to the gym or when you're washing dishes or whenever you listen to Locked On Falcons podcast. Of course, we'll be back later on the week with guests to talk about whatever happens on Sunday against the Bears. And then we'll continue to break down the All 22 and have future guests and turn the page to the week 4 action against the Green Bay Packers. And hopefully the Falcons will have a win under the old W column in the newspaper or on the website, you know, for you young whippersnappers that don't even know what newspapers are. I'm rambling now at the end of the podcast. All right, guys, until then.